Hello and welcome to the Cloud Blue podcast, sponsored by NordVPN. If you want to hear more information about NordVPN, there's a link in the podcast description down below. I'm your host for this one, Dan Rowlandson, and I'm joined by John Townley to answer all your Aston Villa questions ahead of a big week for Aston Villa with Man City on Wednesday and Brentford on Saturday. John, how are you, mate? You okay?
Yeah, doing well, thanks, Dan. It's nice to have a couple of days off before the City game, before Tuesday, actually. Tuesday's press conference, which is going to be Ollie Watkins Day, I think. You know, what is the update if it doesn't come out before then? Yeah, I'm doing well, thanks, Dan. It's nice to have some days off, so nice to have lots of football on as well. I really like the championship games on the Friday to the Monday. You know, as many people probably are aware at this stage, I get pretty bored without any football. So, yeah, I'm enjoying myself.
Yeah, good, nice. This is, for clarity, we're recording this on Sunday night to get this in, because I'm obviously off this week. This is our usual Monday show where we answer all your Aston Villa questions. Before we get into any of those, let's just quickly start with Wolves. A very nice win, a really important win to get 3 points. Nice to finally beat them at last in what feels like a lifetime. Is that your overall assessment of it? Just a really nice day at Villa Park? That's kind of how it felt to me and Matt on the post-match.
Yeah, I listened to the post-match when I was doing my my work on the night, and I think you summed it up well, really. Like the last 10 or so minutes, you know, after we scored the second goal, there was no real signs of panic. And I did say to the reporters around me, you know, obviously Villa have been in this position before, 2-0 up against Wolves with, you know, no sign of danger up until a couple of goals. And yeah, then they go on to win the game a few years ago. But no, yeah, really professional performance from Villa. And, you know, Villa's squad is depleted. I think we've said that all the time. You know, McGinn out and Watkins comes off. So I'm not making the argument that Villa don't have it tough, because they do. And we've said this every podcast we've made this season. But I think for Wolves, the way that they play, to not have Hwang, Neto and Cunha, you know, and have a very inexperienced striker, and then he's replaced by another inexperienced striker, that sort of stuff. It does affect how they play. And
yeah, of course.
To be honest, I actually think Wolves were good. They were solid. They were well organised. They made it difficult for Villa at the start of both halves. But Villa's quality told. And yeah, they win 2-0 against a team that are, as we said in the preview, knocking on the door of European football, even without the likes of Neto and Hwang. They haven't had those players throughout the whole of the season, so they are still a very good team. So yeah, full credit to Villa, though. They you know, they had a job to do, and they did it with no real issue. There was, apart from the 8 Nori chance, I don't remember Wolves really making much. I think their job was to stifle Villa, sorry, their plan. And they did it for periods, but yeah, Villa's quality told, as I say. And in the end, it could have been a couple more. Zaniolo had a decent chance, didn't he? Yeah, after that second goal, it was, you know, plain sailing. So yeah, really important victory. There's still work to do, but yeah, it's one of those, and we're just ticking them off, aren't we? So yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, ticking them off is a nice way of phrasing it. Do you agree with my sentiments in the post-match show that Villa don't need to be swashbuckling and attractive football and, you know, free-flowing, scoring loads and loads of goals? It is just about whittling down those games to 8-7, 6-5, 4-3, 2-1. I wasn't going to go all the way, but I might as well. And picking up as many wins and as many points as we can. And if that means being super professional and winning 1-0, 2-0, and just going, well, we didn't play amazingly, but we've done enough to get 3 points. That's kind of where we are now in the season, I feel.
Yeah, and I think you have to look at our fixtures remaining now. And you do look at City and Arsenal away and think, well, if they're going to win either of those games, I think it's unlikely. You know, again, we don't know the condition of Ollie Watkins, you know, whether he plays or not against Man City, I don't know. I'd probably brand that as unlikely. John McGinn is obviously out, so going to City, you know, I don't know, Villa could get a point, which would be a fantastic result, but are they going to win at City or Arsenal? Possibly not. So you're looking at Brentford and Bournemouth. Those are two must-win home games. And if Villa do win those games, that's fifth pretty much nailed on, really.
Agreed, yeah.
I think Man United, I did the maths yesterday, if Villa win three more games, United would have to win something like 7 of their last 9. That's not going to happen. So, yeah, if Villa can win those two home games, Bournemouth and Brentford, they're in a really strong position to finish in the top 5. Or it's basically, you know, they are going to. Again, hopefully top 5 gets Champions League. But I just do think with Tottenham, it's a flip of a coin for me. I think it's going to be such a strange end to the season between us and them. It's going to fluctuate. Tottenham could win at West Ham or, you know, whatever it may be, and we might lose at City. They above us. It's going to keep dropping and changing, and then Tottenham will have games in hand later in the season against Chelsea, against City. So I don't want to look at really what they're doing. I just want to focus on ourselves. Can we win, you know, all of our home games? I know Liverpool's going to be difficult at the end, but can we win Chelsea, Brentford and Bournemouth? Those three will be in a good position then. You've got, you know, Brighton away, obviously Palace away on the last game of the season. You know, I think it's one of those where we can get ahead of United. As I think a few weeks ago I said, that would be fantastic if we could do that as we go in the Conference League as well, knowing that we've got top five and Arsenal have beaten Bayern and the coefficient's looking like it's in our favour. Hopefully that's the situation we'll be in come, you know, the end of April.
Hopefully,
yeah. That's the situation there. And then, you know, can we sneak ahead of Tottenham towards the final day of the season? And I think that's the kind of way it will go. We're probably going to have to do something against Palace because I don't see us getting enough points ahead of Tottenham up until that point.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they've got enough. I know they sneaked over the line against Luton, but I do think they'll stick around, I think. So, yeah, it's going to be a very exciting end to the season, but I'm, you know, really content with where we are. And I think we're in a really strong position still.
Let's dive into the questions then. Daniel, first of all, says, if we got guaranteed top five with four or five games left, would you focus on the Europa Conference League instead of the league and hope that fifth position is a Champions League space? Kind of what we've just been talking about, I suppose. You need to know how... So we play Conference League for us is April 11th and 18th, I think, off the top of my head. So the Champions League will be that week as well, the Wednesday or the Tuesday, the 10th and the whatever. Yeah. If Arsenal have beaten Bayern Munich and West Ham beat Bayer Leverkusen and we beat Lille, which, yes, is not a German team, but it's another English team going through. Right. If all those things were to happen, I think we'll probably know then that fifth place is going to be a Champions League spot. So you are talking about mid to late April. If we've got a 10-point gap on Man United and there's only five games left to play, we said on the post-match show, we'll get to a point soon where it doesn't need to go to the final game of the season because it'll become mathematically impossible for them to catch us. So if we are in that position that fifth is a Champions League place and we've got four or five games left, I think, well, we're definitely going to be fifth. Can we sneak fourth? Ultimately, if fifth is a Champions League space, it doesn't really matter. So do you go, well, doesn't really matter what we do in the league now. It is all about that semi-final in the Conference League in early May or whatever the date for it is.
Yeah, and going off those dates, that would be, you know, in terms of us playing the second leg against Lille, then we would play Bournemouth at home. So by that game, we might know, we might know if fifth place is going to be for the Premier League, because, I mean, I think Bayer Leverkusen should beat West Ham over two legs. But Dortmund might get knocked out to Atletico Madrid, I think. And then, of course, Arsenal knocking out Bayern Munich, us going through against Lille. All of those things are pretty much ensure that fifth
Liverpool
place
winning their leg as well, again, not against the German side. The more English sides keep going through, the better, yeah.
Yeah, City might get knocked out to Real Madrid, we don't know. But those German teams, if they go out, Dortmund and Bayern, or Leverkusen and Bayern, whichever kind of group, if two of the three go out, there's a high chance that, Premier League would do it. But, of course, we still have work to do even at that point. So we're going to still have to beat Bournemouth. We're still going to have to beat Chelsea. So I don't think we can look at, can we take, I don't want to say take the foot off the gas, but I think it's kind of like your last three Premier League games. I've always said up until we get to Brighton away, what position are we in then? Because they're, you know, both of those away games aren't easy. And then you've got a difficult home game against Liverpool. But as I say, we should know by then where fifth place lies or, you know, where does it stand? To kind of answer the question, I would be, if we're, you know, top five guaranteed or as good as long as we all don't miss out of entering a final, whatever, a semi-final, then I'm happy to concentrate on the Conference League because fifth and fourth, if it's the same reward, I'm not really too fussed. If it means saving some players for a semi-final in Fenerbahce in a game that we have to win, you know, that sort of thing, you have to go with where your priorities are. And if we've done enough to get Champions League football fifth, fourth, to me, it's, you know, of course, if we weren't in the Conference League, I want to be finishing above Tottenham and finishing as high as we can. But if it means that we have to save a couple of players against Brighton to then win at Fenerbahce, as I say, Olympiacos, then I'd be happy.
That's smart, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think that's controversial. I think it's just, that was the position that we want to be in, and hopefully we will be in.
Another question now. This one's from David. He says, are we glad we have a manager who doesn't make excuses when we lose? Gary O'Neill's comment about Wolves winning on XG was embarrassing. Now, I was wanting to include this as a bit of a spin-off for something I wanted to speak about a few weeks ago. I don't know, it might have been Gary O'Neill, to be honest, but it was that manager kind of going to the fans and doing the fist bumps and all that kind of stuff. He is one of many that do that kind of thing. You know, Emery straight down the tunnel, win, lose, or draw. The attention is not on him, it's on his players, all that kind of thing. Very almost respectful in that sense. I'm not particularly bothered about the XG comments. It is what it is. It was a little bit sour grapes. I thought, if you look at all the data, we should be fourth, Pochettino is saying in the week as well. It's like, oh yeah, but the data is the points you've got, and the points you've got, you're mid-table. Things like that, yeah, you sound a little bit stupid. You don't hear things like that from Unai Emery. But just on that, the kind of like touchline manner or the coming on the pitch at the end and all that kind of stuff. Guardiola in the game against Arsenal this evening, coming on and like berating Jack Grealish and getting involved with Saliba and Rice. And it's just like, I'm glad, yes, that like David says, regardless of comments and stuff, that Emery conducts himself, that he doesn't get involved in these coming onto the pitch and making a scene and fist pumping the whole end when we lose, when we win and all these kind of things. I like the way he goes about his business.
Yeah, and you mentioning, you know, kind of concentrating on the job in hand and being, I don't know how to explain it, but when Gary O'Neill went to shout at the fourth official at Molineux instead of shaking Emery's hand first, kind of the example. And Gary O'Neill, I'm sure, is like a nice guy. I think he gets very emotional sometimes. That was like a case in point. And then he kind of blamed Emery for not shaking his hand when it was like, well, you had a 10-second window to do so, as you normally should. But yeah, his XG comment, like, I understood, because it was basically saying, you know, we have a depleted forward line and whatever. But did they win on XG? I mean, no, you can't win on XG, but you know, did they have a better XG than Villa? Because if so,
I don't know off the top of my head, but the point is there, that the frustration would be, yes, Wolves, if they had their full strength squad, maybe they do score two goals. Let's not forget Villa have a massively depleted squad as well. If Mings, Buendia, Kamara, Watkins only played 45 minutes. You know, if all those players are added into Villa, maybe we score three anyway. So,
I think it's just
a bit bitter, doesn't it?
But they are the underdogs in that game, and they do have, you know, a weak front line. So he's trying to boost that up. But the point that he said about if we had Neto, if we had Hwang, maybe that would be different. That doesn't ring right to me at all, because if
you
those players...
So crack on.
Yeah, but if those players aren't there next season, well, do you know what I mean? He wasn't getting his excuses in, but as Emery, as we say, you know, no excuse culture sort of thing. There's no room for... you know, not trying your best and not giving your all, and there's no room for that kind of excuse, I guess. It's just big plus to having Emery as your manager, basically. He doesn't make those arguments like we see that Arteta does, and I think it rubs off in the wrong way. Like, you saw Odegaard today quite a few times shouting at the referee and raising his arms and stuff. It's just, crack on, man. Like, the game's really going. Like, just play.
AB says, hi, Dan. And John. He didn't say and John because he didn't know that you were going to be on the podcast with me. Hi, Dan. What's our best 11 this season? You can include injured players. Now, I think we've probably spoken about this before. Is there such thing as a best 11 these days? I get the point of, like, these are, you know, if you were doing a fantasy team sheet, these are the players that you would pick to put together. But in the game where football is so interchangeable and you need your five subs and there's a lot of games to be played and you have to rely on a squad, best 11 is probably a thing of the past, where you've got 11 good players and a couple off the bench who could do a job. Having said all that, because I think that is true, what is our best 11?
I'm relatively confident with that, actually. It would be Konsa right back, Pau Torres and Diego Carlos. Left back would be Luka Dean, Emi Martinez.
Not Torre Mings.
I think that's difficult to say right now, because I've seen this team I'm about to say play Man City off the park and play Arsenal. Yeah. And the balance, obviously, as a right footer works. But this is the point you mentioned, Dan, about obviously this might be your best 11 in a cup final, maybe, I don't know. But these players are as important. You know, Tyrone Mings is, you know, will be as important as Carlos, as Torres, because you need four centre-backs in a Premier League campaign. You can't have three, because then one injury means that you're down to your bare bones. So, but yeah, that would be my back four. And then Kamara Luiz as a pivot, John McGinn on the left, Bailey on the right, Youri Tielemans supporting Ollie Watkins. I think that would be my best team. And then you've got on the bench, obviously, Diaby, Duran, depth there, Jacob Ramsey, Morgan Rogers, Buendia. Probably missed a few as well, but there's a lot of depth there. So, but of course, we will have four or five injuries for any given game next season as well, I don't doubt. Judging by the way this season's going, it's every other team as well. It's Newcastle had another
ACL, yeah.
Had another ACL like we did. So it's, I don't know what. Why is it?
I don't know. I was going to ask
games?
You.
I presume it's more games. Nothing else has changed. The pitches haven't changed. Boots haven't changed. Boots have. You know what I mean? Though it's not. You know, I think it's probably the amount of games. That's the only thing I can put my or the amount of time they're playing in games as well. Because it's all adding up now. So
yeah, possibly. Yeah.
I think Villa have played like 4 extra matches in terms of added on time this season.
Really? Is it as much as that? Wow.
Yeah, it's staggering. Obviously, that would be similar for other teams as well.
Yeah. Let's go Eleanor next. This might be an out there shout, but Morgan Rogers reminded me a little bit of a raw Jack Grealish yesterday with the way he was carrying the ball and had 2 or 3 players trying to foul him at once. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I usually say this about Jacob Ramsey, actually, the way that he carries the ball and he can move up the pitch, carry it, and yeah, similarly to what Grealish did. And yeah, I think I'd probably compare him to that ilk of player. I think probably more so Ramsey, because Grealish is, you know, he'll run up the pitch and make an assist for a goal, whereas Rodgers is so raw at the moment. It's, you know, he's got everything there and really excited about him. But of course, as I say, he's raw with this. He's got plenty of learning to do. And actually, I think he's developed a lot even in just the last few weeks, to be fair. I think when he first joined, there was, you know, sparks, flashes of quality. You could kind of see what kind of player we have. But he seems to be a bit more confident now, I think. There was a couple of flicks and tricks, whatnot, and against Wolves. A player that I really like. And, yeah, definitely worth drawing comparisons in terms of how he was moving the ball. Grealish, I think it was his balance that allowed him to kind of just glide past players. I think it's said in the previous video that's basically just, you're born with that talent. That's a natural ability. Whereas Rodgers and Ramsey, of course, they've got that in their skill set. But I think they're more powerful. They can, get out of challenges because they're quite physical as well. And especially Rodgers, he almost looks like a target man if you see him on the pitch. But he's a very powerful runner, big legs, and he can stride past players as well. So yeah, he'll take some stopping in a couple of years for sure once he fully adapts to Premier League football. We've certainly got a player who, you know, if nothing more, will be a real handful for players that he's coming up against. I'm sure he'll add goals, assists as the months and years go on as he plays with Villa.
You sparked a reminder here for a theory I wanted to bring to you from a conversation I was having with a couple of the guys around me at Villa Park yesterday. We were talking about, we always feel like, it feels like we start the second half poorly, like fairly regularly, like we don't look quite
at it. Yeah, we do, yeah.
And this is the theory that we were kind of talking about. What, you know, why is this? So let's speculate for a sec. The reason I'm bringing this up now is because you mentioned about Rodgers looking like he's, you know, beginning to adapt and learn things already, and he's only been here since January. And to me, that is, he's now being coached by a world-class manager, taking on loads of new information, things he probably would never have been told about before, adapting to teammates, the way we want to play. That is a lot to take on, and hopefully we're already starting to see the fruits of that. And we'll continue to do so. Theory that I'm putting 2 points here together. Do you think we're taking on loads of information at halftime or something? And that's why we come out, that we've kind of been bombarded with video clips and do this and do that and really technical stuff in such a short period of time that we almost come out of the second half and it takes us a little bit to get going? Or is it an intentional thing? This is what somebody was saying near me, that we intentionally come out and play a little bit ropey, almost to goad the opposition into coming on to us so we can counter on them. Not quite sure whether that would be the case. Have you got any wild theories about why the second half tends not to start very well? Because that's a pretty common trend now, I feel.
Not particularly. I think it would certainly be, I'd be leaning towards the first argument than the second one.
Rather than we're intentionally doing it, yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's probably something in the first one because they have so many analysts. And I remember reading something about one of Emery's analysts at Villarreal coming down to the dressing room and giving loads of different images and whatnot and information to the players for the second half. So that might be a part of it. You could flip it and say, well, will the opposition analysts do the same thing and say, right, this is how Villa are playing, here's how we can do this and that. And then I don't know, it's like a game of analysts these days, isn't it? And then halfway through the second half, our analysts say, well, they're doing it. It's not my field. Obviously, I'm not that technical. So I wouldn't know exactly, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's, you know, because you're having a break in play. What happens in a break of play? Well, obviously it allows not just the players to reset, but yeah, the analysts and the manager to look at it from a tactical point of view. And that there's definitely something in that. I think every game would be different though, because we don't play the same way, every game. And there's obviously, you know, minutiae in each game, in each half. So it's, yeah, definitely something tactical, I think, but I don't know exactly what.
Just as a side point, as we're talking about breaks, obviously we've just come off the back of an international break where we've not played a Premier League game for 10 days, 2 weeks, whatever it is. I've not seen the full 90 minutes of anyone else this weekend. I watched bits of Arsenal Man City earlier. I didn't watch the full thing. I've seen Match of the Day. I've seen highlights of the games from this weekend. Has anybody played particularly well coming off the back of an international break? It all feels a bit disjointed from everybody. I don't think anyone has put in a performance where you think, oh, they look on fire. Even, you know, we've had a relatively comfortable 2-0 win there at Villa Park. I don't think we played brilliantly. There were spells where we were just kind of almost going through the motions. Mm-hmm. Spurs only get a last-minute winner. Man United are obviously Man United. Man City and Arsenal kind of cancel each other out. Liverpool beat Brighton 2-1. Like, it's all a little bit...
Yeah, you probably... I mean, I didn't watch it. I was listening to it on the radio the second half anyway after work, but... You probably say Brentford played the best. I didn't watch it, but
all shots.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's also coupled with this period of the season as well. I know there's still quite a lot of games to play, but it's in such a short period of time. Like in a month, the season's done. It's over. Sorry, no, it's not. In 2 months, it's finished.
6 weeks ish. Yeah,
it's all going to come very quickly, and so there's a lot of games to be played there. So I think teams are. Or players even, there's, you know, we saw it in the City Arsenal game. It was one of the worst games of the season so far, to be honest. That's because there's so much pressure involved now at both ends of the table, especially when you're playing a team right next to you.
Neither wants to lose, do they?
Yeah, and you were never going to get that between Villa and Tottenham, especially because Tottenham are so kind of gung-ho and they go for it. We played in a different way a couple of weeks ago, and I think that was, you know, a mistake by Emery, to be fair. But yeah, that's why I think Tottenham will stick at it for the rest of the season, because they play in a certain way, which means that they will score goals, and more often than not, because they're a better team than most teams that they'll be playing, they'll probably outscore them. So they'll come unstuck and they'll win games as well. I think so will we. So that will go down to the wire, I think, the top four race. But yeah, in terms of this weekend, there'll be times where teams play others off the park. But yeah, I think coming after an international break, it's never going to be like a particularly easy game for anyone.
I suppose the standout game of the weekend, not to make this a podcast, not about Villa, but Newcastle-West Ham being 4-3. But again, you could say, well, West Ham started that game and were 3-1 ahead, and then Newcastle come into it and win the game in the end. So they've both had a kind of a good half and a bad half. So yeah, it just feels very disjointed after a break, and it'll be interesting to see who can kind of click into gear for the remaining, because we're in the running now, aren't we? I would say 8 games left to go. I'm calling this the running now. I think this episode will be something to do with the running. Yeah. It's who can.
I was calling it
wins in that 8 game period. Can you win 4 out of 8, 5 out of 8, whatever it is, and just be professional about it? And who can kind of get up to speed quickest after this international break, I think, will be the ones that go on to achieve something. And hopefully that's us.
Yeah, I was calling it a running 4 games ago, wasn't I? So
game week 15 or something. We're in the running now. Right, let's move on to a different question, something slightly different. Ricardo says, name a better goalkeeper in the world than Emi Martinez. Seriously, I would not swap him for anybody. He doesn't even seem to get mentioned for our player of the season, and I'm not sure why. He's unbelievable. Just on the player of the season thing, I almost feel like, I think we said this last year when we did our player of the year picks, you almost kind of like discount how good he is, because it's just like, well, that's what he is. Do you know what I mean? It's a little bit like Roy Keane. Well, that's his job, isn't it? We know he's like seriously world-class, so it's almost like you don't include him in those shouts for player of the year, because you kind of go, we know he's that good, so he's kind of in his own bracket almost.
Yeah.
That probably helps as a goalkeeper as well, I suppose.
Yeah, I did a piece on it earlier, maybe, I don't know, 2 weeks ago potentially, and just saying, like, we know that Watkins, Bailey, Luiz, Torres, Konsa will probably all be ahead of Martinez, just because, as you say, they're done. It's like, well, this is his level. You know, he doesn't come down from it. And it's very hard to get even better because he's so good. You know, it's the question asked, is there a better goalkeeper? I'd flip it and say, would you swap him? No, I wouldn't. And that's the point. You know, you can, I don't know, Real Madrid fans will say, oh, Courtois better and whatever. You know, don't care. It's for Aston Villa, it's, yeah, the goalkeeper.
I think when we talk about like player sales and stuff, and if we need to make a sale for FFP, which I think might be one of the questions it usually is, I think of all the players, Emi Martinez is one of the ones I would least like to lose, just because of how important he is. Now, it's so difficult to replace a goalkeeper full stop, never mind one of his quality.
Yeah, and it's, well, he's captain as well, it's his leadership, it's everything that he brings. Yeah. He has an aura about him in the dressing room, everything that comes with it. He's massive in Argentina as well. He's got a burger named after him. Like, he's huge in the goal and elsewhere. So, yeah, as you say, Dan, it's a player that at the moment just feels like he's like solidified at Aston Villa, cemented there. And if he was, yeah, I don't know, even in like 3 years, 4 years, 6 years, whenever it is, it's like that's going to leave a massive hole, and it's going to be hard to kind of recover from, because it, you know, I'm sure he'll leave on good terms whenever that is. You know, I don't know, he could retire, but I've no idea. But yeah, to think about Aston Villa or an 11 without Emi Martinez, it's not something you want to think about. So yeah, he's just become part of the furniture now, hasn't he? And just without us really, not without us realizing it, but it's one of those to say, when he isn't there, it's going to be like, oh wow, like, we had that goalkeeper who won Messi the World Cup. Like, it was, the guy's going to go down in history.
Next question is from Mike, who says, we're not in a title race this year. And we're not, Mike, we're not a million miles away, are we? What needs to happen in the off-season for us to be considered serious contenders for next season? Just on the title race, obviously, like Man City and Arsenal drew today. So 64 for Man City, 65 for Arsenal, 67 for Liverpool. But we're only 59 with Arsenal, Man City and Liverpool all to play. In some hypothetical scenario where we beat all three, we are maybe in a title race with six games to go. Imagine that, in a tongue-in-cheek way. We're not suggesting it. I'm not suggesting we're going to win the title this year or next year or the one after or whatever. But let's say we're talking about how a team's put a run together. We need three wins maybe to secure top five, because Man United will need seven. Just imagine a scenario where Villa do something silly and win six out of eight or whatever. And you did take points off of Liverpool and an Arsenal or a Man City.
I would have had to,
To do that. Can you just imagine for a brief scenario that we go into like the last couple of games of the season and we might only be like 4 or 5 points off the top? Like, even if we're in that stage, what an unbelievable thing that would be to almost be just involved in that conversation. Imagine.
I mean, we are technically involved in a title race if you put it like that, because we have the three to play. And yeah, if we beat them, we are amongst it. But yeah, we could win our last, as you say, Dan, 6 of 8, but it might not even be enough then. So it's, yeah.
It's just funny though, isn't it? Funny.
We're closer to the top of the league than we are to sixth place by like half points, if that makes sense. You know, 11 to United, and what is it, 5-6 to Liverpool, something like that? I don't know.
It's 8 to Liverpool.
Okay.
I've got a game in hand. But yeah, the point stands to not be in Europe, let's say, which is Newcastle on 43. We're 13 ahead of them. So yeah, we're closer to the title than we are to dropping out of Europe.
Yeah, it's wild.
Right, let's move on. Jay says, can Duran step up if Watkins is injured? I think he's a pest who makes defenders make mistakes, but he can be a walking red card. Now, get what Jay's coming out, that he's a bit of a hothead. He's an agent of chaos, I said on the post-match show. I think he's actually been sent off for us yet, so not technically a walking red card, but I know what he's saying. I think he can step up. I don't think he's somebody that I would want to be seeing play 15 Premier League games in a row if Watkins gets a serious injury. So I'm not sure how many goals he would contribute in that period. For a couple of games here and there, and if Watkins goes off at half-time in a game, I think Duran is more than capable to come on and be a nuisance and be involved in our forward play, whether he actually gets the goal or the assist. He's going to be part of us doing something and upsetting defenders.
Yes, but starting games and, you know, a lot of games in a row, that's where the issue lies. I've sung Duran's praises a lot. I think he's a very good player. I think he's got everything there, apart from the experience, and you know, he's probably still, I don't want to say immature,
I suppose the point is, if he did have 15 games in a row, that would make him a better player, and then we'd have more confidence in him.
But the question being, you know, if Watkins is injured, I don't know, if Watkins is injured for 4 weeks, should we say, that will include a quarterfinal, you know, what, 3 Premier League games where Duran is then going to have to play, what, 5 games in a row? Is he fit enough to do that anyway? Will his confidence go if he has 2 games where he barely touches the ball? I think he took 20 minutes to touch the ball against Wolves. So it's, you know, I'm absolutely more than happy to see Duran come onto the pitch to make a difference. I think that is his role. Starting games, playing 90 minutes. He's had a few niggly injuries himself. So, yeah, leading the line for Villa over the course of a few weeks where the pressure's on him to deliver, that's a whole different situation. And not something that I'd, you know, say that he isn't going to do, but we haven't seen it yet. And do we want to see it in the most important season sorry, the most important part of the most important season that we've had in a very long time. Well, not necessarily because we had, you know, we had to get promoted out of the Championship and whatnot, but you know what I mean? This is the most exciting part of this season. And yeah, will he step up? You know, I'd like to think so, but it's, you know, asking a lot of a player who's, what has he started, one Premier League game against West Ham, and it wasn't necessarily his fault because I don't think the structure is right, but he, you know, barely got involved in that game. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
Nick says, if you had to choose, would you rather Blues be in the Premier League so we get the derby twice a season, or in League One so they're a laughing stock? Brackets. The Wolves game just reminded me how long it's been since we've had the derby. Close brackets. I'd be happy to never play Birmingham City again. I don't like the pressure that comes with it, the stress. There's that no-win situation that if we beat them, it's, oh, well, they're expected to beat them. Look at the difference in quality, yada, yada, yada. And if we lose to them, it's an absolute disaster and they'll live off it for the rest of their lives. I don't want to be associated with that club. I don't want to play them. I don't want the pressure of it. I'd rather never see them ever again, to be honest. Not in a, I hope they go out of business kind of way, because, yes, Birmingham City still needs to exist, sadly. But I don't want to have to be involved in games between them. If they're in League One and we're pushing for the Champions League, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I wonder how their UB40 gig's going to get on. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I've seen it like in the stands rather than like, I thought it was going to be like a stage on the pitch, like a big thing.
Like, words fail me. I don't know how to put this, but if I feel like that was a club who was more relevant, it would be on, you know, BBC. It would be on the front of Sky Sports, front of newspapers. They've ripped up seats in their own stadium before a game to put drum kits. Get your head around that. It's mental.
I mean, there'll be nobody sat there anyway, so I'm not worried about that. It's not like they'll be lessening the attendance. I mean, the question says, you know, would you like, rather they be in League One so they're a laughing stock? They're a laughing stock anyway.
I don't.
They're the fans, at least. Yeah. They're a laughing stock falling around the bottom end of the Championship. Never mind whether they actually go down to League One. Like, that is a disaster for most clubs. All right, let's talk about Birmingham on the rise again when they got this takeover. Yeah, on the rise to where? What a joke.
Just want to see what happens in the UB40 gig. To be fair, mate, if they were to lose to Preston, what happens then? Do they carry on? What are they doing the gig after they get it? Sorry, I can't get my head around that. What are the plans that they have in place? Because
I don't know. This is fantastic. Well, yeah, so this is Sunday night for us. So when this is coming out for everybody on Monday, you've only got a few hours to wait to find out, whereas we've got a whole day to see what happens.
So if they beat Preston, will the 2,000 fans there, you know, have a big get together? And
yeah, I don't know. Laughing stock confirmed either way, League One or otherwise. Let's move on to another question from Adrian, who says, where would you rate Unai Emery in a list of Premier League managers? For me, he is numero uno. Klopp, Guardiola, Emery is a top three, in my opinion.
I always give the same answer of certain managers fit certain clubs. Yes, manager specialises in keeping teams out of the bottom three, won't win a league title, but Pep Guardiola would probably get relegated with Sheffield United. So it's...
Do you think? Would Pep Guardiola take Sheffield United down?
Yeah.
If you're supposedly the best manager in the world and one of the best has ever been, surely you can still keep a side in the Premier League, even if you only scrape it.
To be fair, Sheffield United's probably a harsh example. They are.
I get the point that he wouldn't be able to turn Sheffield United into a top 16 or anything, but I think if you're supposed to be the best manager in the world, you should be able to keep a team in the Premier League.
But that's my point. You know, Pep Guardiola is the best manager in the world because he is the best manager at coaching the best players. Whereas...
Has he ever done it on a cold night at Stoke? No.
Well, he might have, to be fair.
I'm going to get rid of this one because I've not given it any thought.
What's your favourite chocolate bar? I haven't given any thought yet.
That is coming up, John, so...
Get away, is it? Your favourite chocolate?
Essentially, so give chocolate at least some thought. The penultimate question is from The Villain, who says, do you think Dean and Zaniolo should start against Man City over Moreno, brackets, whose crossing was awful against Wolves, close brackets, and Morgan Rogers?
Yes, to Dean. I was surprised that Dean didn't play above ahead of Moreno against Wolves. Moreno is a really difficult one. I mean, he's clearly not as efficient as what he was last season, put it that way. Emery was still happy with, you know, in terms of him trying, and he was getting in the right areas, which I actually totally agree with. He was a threat apart from his final ball, if that makes sense. Like, he was still making angles, he was still getting in behind. Yeah, if that was Moreno last season and you kind of paused it as he cocked his leg back last season, it might be a better cross. Whereas this season, it was flying in, in against Wolves, it was flying into the north stand and stuff. So, yeah, really disappointing to his final balls. And what I would say is there's no one that will be more aware of this than Alex Moreno. So I'm not like a big fan of the whole groans and moans around Villa Park when a cross doesn't, like, I get it. And everyone's like, oh, for God's sake. But there was a point where it really got quite loud when Moreno had a chance to shoot, but then he kind of cut back because clearly he's not confident. Mm. And it all kind of got on top of him. And I was like, oh, it's a bit, but I get it. It's, you know, in the moment. But yeah, Luka Dean, I'd start ahead of him against City. And Zaniolo, I don't think I would start him because, again, I think he's an impact player. I don't think he can have that same effect.
I don't think he can have that chaotic energy from the start. I think he has to come on and run at tired legs and just kind of go, I don't know what Zaniolo is going to do, and I don't think he does either.
He's a maverick, as you say. He doesn't know what he's doing, and therefore the defender doesn't. So if you tell him exactly what to do, he's limited. That's why I think, you know, he's at the club for a reason. I think at the start, Emery tried to kind of pigeonhole him into a position and a system, obviously, to kind of coach him into something that he wanted him to be. But I think he kind of found out it's not really working. Let's just use him as a player who can cause chaos, which is what John Duran is to an extent as well. But John Duran is a player who can be moulded if he nails down and listens to Emery and concentrates. That's a player who can do that. But Zaniolo is a lone player. He's not old at all. He's still relatively young for a footballer. But a player I don't think is a system player. He wants to do his own thing. As I say, he's quite eccentric. So he's in terms of how he plays. So, I think that's how you utilise Zaniolo, and Man City might not be the game for that. We could find ourselves behind without the ball, you know, towards the second half. Or we might not. Who knows? Maybe we'll be in the game still, and then you can bring him on potentially to win the game. I don't know. But then going the other way, would he then be a bit of a liability on that left side? So I don't know. I wouldn't start Zaniolo, and I don't think Man City is probably the game for him. Like, I hope you're going to clip this up, Dan, and put it out after we win 1-0 Zaniolo. But I'd have thought Rodgers would just continue. Jacob Ramsey obviously wasn't in the squad, was he, for Wolves, although he's started training again. That's probably wise not to include him in the squad for Wolves if he's not 100% ready. There's no point in taking risks. And, you know, he's had a lot of reoccurring injuries. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think this would happen, but I think it's a more likely situation that Timmy Rabunim starts and Tielemans plays on the left than Rodgers starts instead of Zaniolo. Like, it might be that Rodgers doesn't even play.
Yeah, it's Rodgers going back.
I'm not saying that will happen, but that feels like a more likely scenario than Zaniolo starting out of nowhere. I don't think that'll happen.
Yeah, Rodgers obviously going back to Man City as well, which is an interesting quirk.
Well, of course, Yeah,
he's really good value in the mix zone after the game against Wolves. Those quotes will be on Birmingham Live now. Yeah, go and read those. He said quite a lot of good stuff. I can't quite remember. It would be on. I would get it, but read it instead. He did mention that Emery's calling him, not in like a bad way, but he's calling him, or he keeps telling him he's a championship player. Not in that, not in a horrible way. And I'm going to stress that. So you need to read the quotes. This is the hook.
Headline: Emery labels Morgan Rodgers championship footballer.
Trying to basically say to him, like, you know, you've got a long way to go yet, son, that sort of thing. So he's not calling him, you know, hello championship player, but he's
okay, right.
He's basically reminding him that, you know, you've done well to get here, and you've got a lot more room to grow.
Keep digging, John. Keep digging. Right, let's roll this out. Let's move on. Final question of the show. Read the quotes, everyone. They'll be in the link down below. The final question of this show, it's Easter, isn't it, John? Of course. So I mentioned earlier, or you mentioned, what's your favourite chocolate bar? We're talking Easter eggs, John. The question comes from Matty, who says, what's your favourite type or brand of Easter egg? And is Matt Kendrick still partial to a slab of chocolate concrete? So I sent Matt a message. Chocolate concrete.
Chocolate, is that just a chocolate bar?
I asked Matt Kendrick for a voice note. So I asked Matt Kendrick this question. He gave me his answer. I'm going to play that now. John hangs his head in disappointment. So take it away, Matt. Matt says that he wasn't into chocolate concrete. It must not have been a Rowley Regis thing. So I think it's a regional thing. I think it might be a Birmingham thing. So I'm pretty sure Ash has talked about this before. Right. Chocolate concrete, primary school, dinner time. Cake. The one I think of at primary school was like a sponge cake with white icing and sprinkles on top with custard. That would have been like our pudding at primary school for where I came from. Chocolate concrete is like a really dense, thick chocolate cake with a minty custard, normally a green custard that is like a thing, or a purple custard or a pink. Matt Kendrick said he was not into chocolate concrete, and I think he referenced like a spongy cake instead. So that's the chocolate concrete thing out the way, John. There's your education on that.
Yeah,
and I might have got it wrong, to be honest. It might be pink custard, but I seem to remember thinking green as well. Anyway, Easter eggs. Again, I'm going to throw what I feel is a stereotype towards you here. Are you even an Easter egg connoisseur? Are you a chocolate fan?
I haven't had an Easter egg this year.
I knew you were going to say that.
Week or whatever.
Too fit, aren't you? Too healthy, too protein.
I thought Easter eggs was like a kid's thing, you know? Like, unless well, I'm fair.
To an extent, yeah, I suppose it is.
How much is an Easter egg? £10?
Oh, so the proper big ones that they do now, they're like 10 quid, which is ridiculous. Back in the day, they'd have been a fiver. But you can get like the smaller ones. They're probably a fiver now.
What you do with an Easter egg is you get out of the box and you bash it into pieces, right? Because you can't just eat it.
Yeah.
So you buy chocolate. Well, it's only an Easter egg until you open the box. So I don't get it. I got one for my partner's brother. And he was
only, a kid?
Yeah, he was only four. Okay. It was like one of those Kinder, like it was a Kinder, not a Kinder egg, like a big Easter egg that's from Kinder. Like this, it has the toy inside it. It was like £6.50 or like £5 with a club card. Like,
outrageous. That'd have been £2 yeah. back in the day.
Chocolate's chocolate, isn't it? Like, what's the difference? That's another thing that I don't understand. If you have a Dairy Milk Easter egg, or what's another brand? Maltesers Easter egg. What? Could you tell the difference? Chocolate is chocolate, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm probably stitching myself up here for being the fat man that I am, but I think I could tell the difference between different brands. If you gave me a Cadbury crunchy egg and a Cadbury flake egg,
This is my point. Why would you buy what? Do you know what I mean? What's if you bought a flake egg? So that's
because it comes with a flake as well, like a normal bar.
Buy a flake, then buy two flakes, buy four flakes.
The egg is the gimmick, isn't it? It's the Easter thing, I suppose. Yeah, if you gave me like a Nestle egg, like a Galaxy egg, or a Cadbury's egg,
yeah,
I'd tell the different things. It's a totally different brand of chocolate. Yeah.
When I was a kid, I used to sell the Easter eggs back to my mum.
What?
Yeah, which is a bit of a revelation. Yeah, when I was a kid, I'd sell them back for like £1 or £1, whatever.
What do you mean, sell them back?
So
she bought you an egg and you'd sell it back?
Yeah, no, like, I don't know, like four... boxes, right? What, this one's like 8 or 9, and then I'd be like, okay, because my mum likes chocolate, so instead of having it myself, because whatever, I'm not like a massive chocolate fan, never really have been, I'd just sell them back, because they'd just be sitting there for weeks. So instead of them just rotting or whatever, she would eventually give in and buy them back, so I would just make money off it.
That is probably the weirdest segment that this, and there's been some that this podcast has ever seen.
It's not really, is it? Like, if someone bought something that you don't really want...
Well, why not just not buy it in the first place, then?
Yeah, but she's a great mum, so you know what I mean? I'm a twin brother, so if he's getting all these eggs, I need to have something as well.
Right, so she's kind of forced into doing it out of equality, and then you end up shafting her by it for £1 afterwards.
Yeah.
It would have made more sense if it was like, oh, my auntie gave me this, or I got it from school or whatever. I don't want it, mum, you can have it. Here's £1.
No,
that makes sense. But she buy it and then have to buy it back weeks later is absolutely mental, by the way.
Yeah, she would buy them knowing, right, half of these are going to come back to me.
Why not just put the other half in a cupboard and just have them myself?
When you're twins, I think it's like, if you're a parent and you have twins, it must be very difficult to, do you know what I mean? Balance the whole...
Yeah.
It's not a present, is it? But it's similar vibe. Like, no, if you're sharing them both, they're sharing Christmas, you've got to do everything similar.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, you've won me around there with the more as a parent now, as a more serious point that probably is difficult to juggle.
You've got, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Well, a nonsense segment ended with a little bit of seriousness, but still absolutely mental. You suddenly slipped back to your mom. If anyone else did that in the comments, if you're a twin watching this, then absolutely get in touch and let us know. John, that is it for this week's Q&A. Thank you very much for your time, as always. And thanks to those who sent in questions. You make this show happen every single week. So thank you for getting involved. Loads coming on Claret and Blue as we head into the business end of the season, the running, whatever phrase we're going to call it. Absolutely loads of stuff coming from us here. So stay subscribed. Subscribe, stay watching. Thank you very much for all your support. Thanks for the well wishes about the wedding, by the way. And I will see you live and in person again next Saturday. But there is some pre-recorded content on the way. Thank you, everybody, and I'll see you then. That's how I'm Sean Dyche now at the end of this, because I've not cleared my throat for a few minutes.